that we live in a very corrupt and wicked world? Surely there's nobody here that doubts that. We all agree that the world we live in is very wicked. When you think about the things that are going on, it is just absolutely, well, first of all, shocking, but also depressing. When you think about things that are in the news, we hear about the homosexuals and their agenda and how they are constantly forcing that into our society. That now, of course, even we are faced with the idea of gay marriage, same-sex marriage, and we're supposed to approve that. We're told that's to be acceptable, and we're not to speak out against such things as that. When you think about the horrible crime of abortion, unborn babies being put to death, spend any time contemplating that and imagine the numbers, the sheer numbers of abortions that take place in our world every day. It's just absolutely horrible. We think about the explosion of pornography. More and more we're hearing about people who are taken in by the sin of pornography. And it's become way worse, of course, with the advent of the Internet. It used to be if someone wanted to view pornography, at least they had to take the risk of going someplace where someone might see them to purchase a pornographic magazine or something. But now you don't have to do that. In the, I think, mistaken idea that you can do it anonymously at home with your own computer on the Internet, that is not quite as anonymous as some people think that it is, but at least people are being much more tempted to view pornography. And I don't know about you, but I've heard of a number of Christians, even some preachers, who've become addicted to pornography. They say it's the most rapidly growing form of addiction in our country today, is that addiction to pornography. When you think about illicit sex and alcohol and drug abuse and all kinds of corruption, again, my initial point, I think, is agreed. We live in a very wicked world. It's bad. And it's getting worse. It's not getting better. It's getting worse. Now, having said all that, it is tempting to say that we live in the worst of all times morally. That this is the most wicked that the world has ever been. Our time is the worst time of all. It's tempting to think that. But when we do, we have to say, no, that's not right. As bad as it is, it's not as bad as it was in the days of Noah. In the days of Noah, the world of that day holds the distinction of being the most corrupt of all times. Notice in Genesis chapter 6, it says in verse 5, "Then the Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great on the earth, and that every intent of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually." I would draw special attention here that every intent of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. That's how bad it was. In fact, it was so very bad in the days of Noah that you remember, as that text goes on, at verse 6 it says, "The Lord was sorry that He had made man on the earth, and He was grieved in His heart. And the Lord said, I will blot out man whom I have created from the face of the land, from man to animals to creeping things and to birds of the sky, for I am sorry that I have made them." That's how bad it was. It was really terrible in the days of Noah. So terrible, in fact, notice God said, "I'm sorry that I've made this." That's pretty bad, isn't it? That's how bad it was in the days of Noah. But our lesson this morning centers on the fact that in the midst of all that terrible wickedness, the man Noah stood out as a righteous individual trying to serve the Lord. Continue there in Genesis chapter 6 at verse 8. It says, "Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord. These are the records of the generations of Noah. Noah was a righteous man, blameless in his time. Noah walked with God, and Noah became the father of three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth." In the midst of all of that wickedness, here's Noah. Can you imagine that? We think it's bad in our time, and it really is bad. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But even think about the group assembled here this morning. We're not alone, at least, right? As bad as the world is, we're not alone. We've got just a lot of faithful brethren who encourage and help us. We draw strength from one another. We have that blessing. But in Noah's days, he didn't have that blessing. In the midst of all that corruption, he had no one else to lean upon. And that really makes you admire Noah as being such an individual. It's not only Noah, who was personally a good man in a wicked world, but it's really impressive to me that he was able to save his family from this wickedness. In 1 Peter chapter 3, at verse 20, it says, "...which sometimes were disobedient when once the long-suffering of God waited in the days of Noah while the ark was a-preparing, wherein few, that is, eight souls were saved by water." Those eight souls, think about that. One of those was Noah. Another was his wife. But then the other six were his three sons and their wives. And so, as bad as the world was, not only did Noah make a commitment and live faithfully for the Lord, but he was also able to save his family. And that's the thing that we want to emphasize in our lesson this morning. We want to talk about Noah as a father, as a family man, and see if we can draw some lessons from his life that will help us in living ours. We live in bad times, lots of wickedness, as was the case with Noah, worse than now even. And Noah was able to do it. He was able to personally be faithful to the Lord, and he was able to convince his family to do the same, bringing up his children in a faithful manner. And I want to draw your attention to that this morning to think about it for a few minutes. We're very grateful for your presence here this morning. It's a great encouragement to me to see people who are interested in studying the Bible, so much so that you would come out on a weekday morning. I've been telling you that each morning, and it continues to be a great encouragement. And as I was saying, think about this as a blessing that we have such a thing as faithful brethren to draw strength from. We should really be grateful to God for that. And so we want you to know that your presence here this morning is encouragement to us all, and we commend you for that. Thanks for coming. Let's talk about Noah as a father and as a family man. There are lots of lessons to draw from Noah, but our emphasis today is on this as Noah's role in his family. The first point that we want to make here is that Noah had his own life in order. Certainly we understand that men are to be the spiritual leaders of their families. In the book of Ephesians chapter 5, verses 22 and 23, it tells us that husbands are to be heads over their wives, to be the spiritual leaders of their wives. In Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 4, they are to bring up their children in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord. And so it is necessary, it's God's assigned role, that fathers are supposed to be the spiritual heads of their families. But I want to tell you something. A man cannot be an effective leader. You can't get people to follow you if you're not doing right yourself. Isn't that so? Have you ever been in the situation, maybe on a job, for instance, where certain responsibilities were trying to be put upon you, but the one who was over you, the one who was telling you what to do, wouldn't do the same things himself? That's never a very enjoyable situation, and usually not very effective either. If there's someone in a position of authority and they're trying to get the people under them to do something that they're not willing to do themselves, for instance, maybe you had a boss and he was expecting you to be prompt and on time every day, but you knew that he was never prompt or on time. We just don't like that. It's not very palatable to us. It leaves a bad taste in our mouth. And as I said, it's typically not very effective. And the same is true in the family. If you have a father who's trying to get his children, for instance, to behave in a certain way, but his children know that he doesn't behave as he should in that very same way, then he's not going to succeed very well. And so, again, we stress to you that Noah had his own life in order. This was a very necessary first step in influencing his children. Go back there to Genesis chapter 6 again for just a minute. Verse 8, it says, "Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord. These are the records of the generations of Noah. Noah was a righteous man." And then it goes on to even mention his sons in that same passage. The word righteous is a word worth understanding. And sometimes I believe people are sort of confused by that word. And it doesn't have to be confusing at all. That's a church word, a religious word. We seldom ever use it or mention it except in a religious connotation. But the word righteous is exactly defined in and of itself. It is the idea of being right, doing what's right. Noah was a righteous man. He did what was right. And it really, I believe, stands as a testimony to us that we can do it too. If Noah could do that, in that corrupt, wicked world that he lived in, if he could be faithful to God, live a righteous life, then His example is telling us that it can be done. It is possible. But I tell you, it was the first part of Him being successful with His family that was that He was living right Himself. As I said, we never like it when someone tells us to do something that they're not doing. And we even have coined a phrase that we ought to practice what we preach. And there is nowhere where it's more important than in our families to practice what we preach. Husbands, fathers, learn this. You can't expect your family to follow you if you're not doing right. Parents in general, both fathers and mothers, please understand that you can't expect your children to do right if you're not doing right. And they know. There's not anybody who knows us more completely and thoroughly than our children. And if we're not living right, they observe that and they know. And therefore, our words are wasted on them. If we're trying to convince them to do what's right, but they know that our own actions are not proper, we're just wasting our words. So a first step in being successful with family is do right yourself. I think that's obvious, but needs to be stressed. A second point that we would make is that Noah did not let what was going on around him influence him. Now, it would have been easy to do. It would have been very easy to sort of justify yourself or excuse yourself. We sometimes use the expression, I know I did this when I was a kid, and sometimes it's still tempting to think this way, even today. Say, everybody else is doing it. You know, everybody else is doing it. It's not true in our day and time. Not everybody else is doing it. But think about this. In Noah's time, it was literally true. Everybody else is doing it. You name the wickedness. You name the sin. And Noah could have literally said, everybody else is doing it. We can't say that and be literally honest. It might be a very popular trend. Lots of people may be involved in some sort of wickedness or another. But we can't literally say everybody else is doing it. But Noah could. Noah could say, everybody else is doing it. And therefore, I feel justified if I let down a little. If I just go along a little bit with the trends in my world. But absolutely no, he did not do that. What is dangerous, and I think maybe even more subtly dangerous, is allowing societal trends to gradually callous us and wear us down. In our service this evening, Lord willing, we're going to talk about the evil influence of television. And I think it's a classic example of how we allow societal trends to sort of wear us down. We become callous to it to where it doesn't offend us anymore. I remember the first time that my father ever heard a dirty word on TV. And I don't even remember what the word was now, and I wouldn't say it anyway. But I remember the first time I think he heard a curse word on TV. I remember, and I was just a boy, but I remember him jumping up out of his chair and going to the telephone, looking up the number for the local TV station and calling them to voice his protest over the fact that that word had gone out over the airwaves. Well, now, he is like the rest of us. If we watch TV, we hear those kind of words all the time and it doesn't offend us anymore. And I think that's an example of how we can allow a wicked world to have an adverse effect upon us, to gradually wear us down. If you think about TV and the movies, if you think about our peers, that is other people around us, young people, you need to be particularly concerned about the kind of people that you are around, because peers have a powerful influence and they can affect how we dress and talk and act. We need to be careful about the influence of the wicked world. We live in wicked times. Noah, living in his wicked times, did not allow those contemporary trends to influence him. If we allow them to wear us down, then our own influence begins to be damaged and so forth. And in the case of Noah, I do not believe that he would have been successful in influencing his family to do what was right if he had allowed the societal trends, the things going on around him, to influence him. His influence would have been damaged and his family would have seen that. They would have observed his compromise. And they would not have been as influenced to do right themselves. Back in Genesis, again in chapter 6, notice it says there that Noah was a righteous man, blameless in his time. Noah walked with God. I think it's interesting here that there's an emphasis on in his time. And his time was very wicked, a very bad world. But in that time, Noah was blameless. And notice it says he walked with God. I believe that we understand that the expression to walk with God denotes a regular course of action, a continual, always that way. He wasn't just occasionally doing the will of God. He wasn't just doing the will of God when it was convenient to do the will of God, but it was his normal practice. It's what he constantly did. He was walking with God. He was doing the will of God. And that consistency is very, very important. Undoubtedly, his family saw that consistency in him. Others around him would have known him as a man with that sort of reputation. He's always living for God. We need to do that as parents. We need to learn that to influence our children, they need to see that consistency in us. As I've observed families over the years, even thinking about my own family, my own parents, and others that I've known through the years, I've tried to judge, because I think it's so important for us to try to figure out how to be successful in our own families, what is it that leads to successful families? What is it that leads to a situation where parents raise up their children and their children become faithful Christians and the generations just continue to faithfully serve. You know what I think is one very important key? I don't think it's the only important key, but I think it's an absolutely essential key, is this matter of consistently doing what's right. In other words, our family does not say, our children do not observe, that usually we do what's right, but occasionally, in certain circumstances, will let down and compromise and do something that's wrong. If they see us break that consistent pattern, then children will learn the lesson, and they learn this lesson rapidly. For example, if we almost always attend worship services, in other words, we're not the kind of people who miss services typically, but if we're off on a vacation trip, and on vacation we just break that pattern, say, we're not going to go this time. It's a unique circumstance. Or we usually go to church, but there's a little league ball game tonight, and so we're going to miss services for this little league ball game tonight. In other words, we make rare exceptions, but we're not totally consistent. We make rare exceptions. You know what's going to happen? Your children are going to learn that lesson well. They pick up on that just like that. I mean, rapidly, they learn the lesson that it's okay to compromise. It's okay to break the pattern. And they will take it a step farther than you did. You may have made very rare exceptions to the rule. They'll begin to make more exceptions to the rule when the choice becomes their own. I believe that Noah here was such a man as that he didn't break his consistent pattern. He was blameless in his time. He walked with God. That was his pattern. It wasn't just when it was convenient, because it really was never convenient for him to do the will of God. He was always the outsider. He was always the exception. He was different from everybody else. But even at that, he consistently walked with God. And I believe that that had to have had a powerful influence on his family. Another point that we want to make here is that in addition to just living a proper life and setting a right example, I believe we know that he also actively taught God's will. In 2 Peter chapter 2 at verse 5, Peter mentions Noah, and it says that God spared not the old world, but saved Noah, the eighth person, a preacher of righteousness, bringing in the flood upon the world of the ungodly. Notice that Noah was a preacher of righteousness. Some people think, and some Christians, I've heard Christians voice this idea, that all we really need to do is to live a good example before others. And that they'll eventually pick up on that, and then they'll decide to serve God too, just by virtue of the example that we live. Well, we've already been pointing out that example is very important in leading other people to do the right thing. Example is very important in our own families. And so I do not want to diminish the importance of living a proper example, but example by itself is not enough. People could observe you living a faithful Christian life for years and years and years, and at the end of those years, they would still never know what they ought to do to be saved, We're going to have to give some specific instruction of the will of God too. Example is important, but instruction in the will of God is also necessary. And in the case of Noah, he actively spoke about God. He taught the will of God. He was a preacher of righteousness. And it must be that not only was he telling other people in the world around him of what God was expecting, but he was also teaching that to his own family, because his sons became impressed with the need to obey God. We need to teach people. We need to convert people. I want to tell you, there's nobody more important for us to be working on teaching and converting than our own children. And I'm afraid that too many parents are neglecting that most important responsibility. We need to specifically, directly, and regularly, consistently be teaching our children the will of God. And I would ask the parents who are here this morning, are you doing that with your children? I hope that you are. And I think this good group of young people who are present here and have been all week is a testimony to the fact that you are, in fact, putting emphasis on that. And I commend you for that. But never let down. If you're going to succeed, then you must do as Noah did and actively teach your children the will of God. And so put together the two things that we've mentioned. You've got to live the right example and not let the evil world influence you to do evil. You've got to live right, but you also have to actively teach what is the will of God. And Noah did both of those things. I would also add that Noah did not get so busy with his job that he failed to teach his son. Now, that's a pretty easy trap for people to fall into, and I'm sad to say that I have known many Christian men who got so wrapped up in their work that they didn't take time to be with their families, to teach their children, and to lead them in ways of righteousness. It's not that these men themselves forsook the Lord, but they just were so busy all the time that they did not devote the proper amount of time to be with their families, to influence them by example and teaching. They've let their jobs... How many people have you known of who through the years were so busy with their jobs that as they grew older, in the later years of their life, their children had fallen away and become unfaithful? They may still be faithful themselves, but if you knew the family story, if you knew the history of that situation, you could say, I think what happened there is that he was so busy, he was working so much, he spent so much time on the job that he didn't spend time with his children. And now they've left the Lord and they're not interested in spiritual things. That scenario has been repeated way too many times. Now think about Noah. And it may be a little bit unusual for you to think of Noah having a job, but I want you to think about the job that he had. His job was an enormous job, the job of building the ark. We've talked, and we're going to talk more this week, but we've talked about what an enormous thing that ark was and what a difficult job. Some of us were talking just privately. It's almost hard to imagine how that in those primitive times he was able to accomplish that task. It was an enormous job. Remember, and I want to emphasize this today, and we'll talk some more about it this week, but I think that there's an indication here in Genesis chapter 6 and verse 3 that it took Noah 120 years to build the ark. Remember in Genesis 6 verse 3, the Lord said, My spirit shall not always strive with man, for that he also is flesh, yet his days shall be 120 years. It seems to me that what that verse is saying is God said, okay, I'm going to send a flood. I'm ready now to send judgment upon the world for all the wickedness that is there. But he didn't send it today or tomorrow. He said, I'm going to send it 120 years from now, 120 years out in the future. Why did he do that? I think there may be several reasons. Part of it was his long-suffering nature. We already read that Peter made reference to the long-suffering of God who waited in the days of Noah while the ark was preparing. So the 120 years certainly gave an opportunity for Noah to be preaching, an opportunity, and this is the nature of God, to give men a chance to repent. But I also think that it may very well have taken Noah that long to build the ark. Now, if that's the case, notice this. In Genesis chapter 7, verses 11 and 12, it says it was in the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month, the 17th day of the month, the same day were all the fountains of the great deep broken up, and the windows of heaven were opened, and the rain was upon the earth 40 days and 40 nights. Now, think about this for a minute. If the flood came in Noah's 600th year. And if it did, in fact, take him 120 years to build the ark, how old was he when he started building the ark? Well, 600 less 120, 480, right? So if our thinking is accurate, Noah was 480 years old when God said, I'm going to send a flood. And it may, in fact, have been that's when he started his work of building the ark. But notice this. In chapter 5 at verse 32, it says that Noah was 500 years old, and Noah begat Shem, Ham, and Japheth. He began having his sons when he was 500 years old. What's that tell you? What's that tell you? That tells you that the whole time that his boys were growing up, Noah had perhaps already started the work of building the ark before his sons were ever born. That being the case, for that whole time that they were growing up in Noah's family, he was busy with this job of building the ark. He raised them right in the course of fulfilling that awesome and difficult job. I'll tell you something. If Noah, in that wicked world, in that terrible time, and as busy as he was, if he could raise faithful sons, you can too. If he could raise his children successfully, you can too. And he stands as an example of that. We ought to take courage from that. It can be done. It's not easy. And I don't want any of us to imagine that it was easy for Noah to do it. But he tells us that it can be done. It can be accomplished. And so take heart from that and work hard. And do not let other things become more important. Don't let anything preoccupy your mind or your time to the point that you neglect this very necessary role of being a proper parent and raising your children the way they need to be raised. Something else that I find very interesting in this story. Whoops, let me go back here. Something else I think is very interesting in this story of Noah is that the conversion of his daughter-in-laws says a lot about the influence of Noah. Have you ever thought about this? Who was on the ark? Well, Noah and his wife, and three sons, five people. There were eight people on the ark. Who were the other three? The other three were the wives of his sons, right? Noah and his wife, his three sons and their wives, were the ones that were on the ark. Have you ever thought about this? Where did those daughter-in-laws come from? Well, those daughter-in-laws had to have come from families that did not share Noah's faith and commitment to the Lord. Isn't that right? I mean, it has to be so. Those daughter-in-laws came from families that were destroyed in the flood. They were among the wicked people of the world that were lost in the flood. They came out of those families. And so the fact that those daughter-in-laws were on the ark, had joined in with Noah in serving the Lord faithfully, I think that's a high indication of just the kind of job Noah was doing. In Genesis chapter 7, verse 7, Noah went in and his sons and his wife and his sons' wives with him into the ark because of the waters of the flood. These daughter-in-laws must have been converted to become servants of God by virtue of the work and teaching that Noah had done with his sons, that he had convinced them to be righteous individuals, and they brought these wives, Noah's daughter-in-laws, to that same way of thinking. Now, think about this for a minute. What would those girls that became Noah's daughter-in-laws, what was the decision they were called upon to make? Well, they were called upon to come out of this wicked, corrupt world. They were actually, and if you allow me to use the word converted, and I hope you understand the way I'm using it, they experienced a conversion out of one form of life into a way of life that was much harder and more difficult. Do you think it was easy living right in that wicked world when there was nobody else trying to live right? That would have been a very difficult thing. Do you not imagine that they were subject to a lot of ridicule? That as they were trying to do right and literally everybody else was doing wrong, do you not think that they were subjected to a lot of persecution and ridicule because of that? My guess is that that was the case. And yet Noah's influence and his teaching was powerful enough to bring those girls out of that, that they were willing to make that commitment, moving from that wickedness to a life of hardship and ridicule as they tried to serve the Lord. And I do think that this is a real sign of the leadership that Noah had in his family. And so maybe we haven't often thought about those daughter-in-laws, but I believe that that may be one of the strongest statements that you could make about what kind of a man Noah was and how he lived his life. Finally, I would point out to you that God Himself testified to the success of Noah. Let me ask you a question. How would you rate a preacher in regard to his success as a preacher? How would you rate a man who in his entire life, or at least in 120 years worth of work, was only able to convert 7 people besides himself? Well, we would probably tend to say, that fellow's not doing very good, is he? He's got, in 120 years, there's only 7 other people that have been influenced to live for God? Man, he's not very effective, is he? I think we would be tempted to judge it that way, but that's not the way God judged it. God judged Noah to be a very successful preacher, a very successful man, a very successful family man, a father. In Hebrews chapter 11, at verse 7, Noah is mentioned in Hebrews 11. We often call Hebrews 11 Faith's Hall of Fame because great heroes of the faith are described in Hebrews chapter 11. And in Hebrews chapter 11, verse 7, Noah is one of them. And he deserves to be there. It says, by faith Noah, being warned of God of things not seen as yet, moved with fear, prepared an ark to the saving of his house, by the which he condemned the world and became heir of the righteousness which is by faith. And so that's a testimony to the great life of Noah. And one of his crowning achievements is surely the fact that he was able to save his own family. What about us? When all is said and done, when our lives are over, and when people look back, people who may have known us look back on our lives, what do you think will be said? I want to tell you something. Of all that we may accomplish in life, the greatest thing that could be said about us is he lived for God, and he was able to convince his children to do the same. Wouldn't that be a great thing? I mean, I don't care what else may be said about you. If it can be said, he or she lived a good life, and they were able to bring up their children faithfully to serve the Lord. To me, that's high praise. And Noah got that praise from God. And it is seen here in Hebrews chapter 11, where he's mentioned in that context. And so, we see Noah as a family man, and I believe that there's some real lessons for us to learn from him. Now, one more point about this. You remember an episode that happened after the flood. After the flood, when things as they began to live on the world in the earth again, Noah made a bad mistake. And he became drunken, and because of his drunkenness, one of his sons was led to do something that he shouldn't have done. And I'm not totally sure that I even understand that whole episode, but there is that case in the life of Noah where he made a mistake and it led to a sin of one of his sons. What do you learn from that? Well, you learn that Noah wasn't perfect either, that Noah was a fallible man and that he could make mistakes. We will make mistakes too. As we strive to raise our children, we will make mistakes. But we've got to constantly keep striving to do what's right. And I really do believe that the case of Noah is a case study in how we should be working to raise our families. I hope our lesson's been encouraging to parents this morning. I certainly need that kind of admonition and encouragement, and I hope that it's been helpful to you too. I think Noah's a great example in so many ways. We appreciate you for being here this morning. We're going to sing a song of invitation. If there's anyone present who needs our assistance in making your life right with God by either obeying the gospel or by being restored to faithfulness to the Lord, let us know how we can help while we stand and sing this song.